I'm John Kroll. Thank you for joining us today for another illuminating conversation with No Limits. This show, as you know, is for people who care about ideas, events, trends, and people. It cannot work without your participation. That's why we invite you to join the discussion. Please call 866-476-3881. Reach out to us by email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking about the growing and, in some ways, exploding world of esports today on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at wfyi. My guests are Indiana Public Broadcasting's Lauren Chapman, Senior Director of Esports Operations for the Pacers, Cody Parent, and Tipton teacher John Robertson. Welcome to all of you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
It's good to have you here. So I'll start with you, Lauren, since you've done the reporting on this. First, I think we ought to keep in mind that this is a broad and diverse. We ought to talk about what esports are, because I'm sure there are going to be some people who are out there scratching their heads. Those of us who have children understand it, but yeah, go ahead.
So esports, basically, in the most boiled down version of it, is electronic sports, or where people are sometimes paid to play video games while other people watch them. So one of the most popular platforms would be Twitch. But essentially, it's all of those great video games that you know and love, and other people playing against one another competitively. So that kind of started in the 1970s with arcade games, and has just naturally evolved into what we have now with the NBA 2K League, and with other leagues like League of Legends and Fortnite being two really popular video game platforms.
So Cody, when did this begin the transformation from being a hobby, or, you know, a thing people did to kill time, into something that has now become a huge business?
I would probably say 4 or 5 years ago, when League of Legends really came on the scene and just exploded with franchise slots all over the world. 43 million viewers online watching the championships last year.
Probably ought to talk about what League of Legends is here for those. And I apologize to the members of the audience who are conversant in this, but we want to keep everyone included.
Sure. So League of Legends is a MOBA game. It's essentially a fantasy video game where players have two teams of five, and they battle against each other with different weapons and different spells on the same course. So franchises all over the world essentially pick up five players, and some have even more as backups. They move to the location where they train. They're paid a full-time salary to play on those teams. And yeah, League of Legends is probably the largest esport right now.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Lauren.
And so I have a little bit of a few numbers here.
Okay.
So the peak or unique views for League of Legends World Finals in 2018 was 99.6 million unique views, with an average viewership of 44 million viewers, which I think actually beat the Super Bowl for this year. So these are the kinds of numbers that we're talking about, and these are also worldwide audiences. So the 44 million concurrent viewers average viewers for League of Legends includes people who are watching these streams in China, in Russia, all across the globe, who are tuning in to just watch people play video games.
John, how many of these people are your students?
The professional ones, none so far, but in our small population, we're a rural school. We have about 500 students. We had 65 people join our gaming club, and From them, we had about 30 that played on competitive esports teams.
What's the draw for those 65 out of the 500? By my math, that's about 13%.
Well, it's different for every student, and that's really that's really why I love esports and gaming in general, because we have some that aren't going to be your traditional football players. They're not going to be your traditional basketball players, but they still want to represent their school and be proud of something and contribute. So there's that group that gets to do that. But we do have, you know, traditional athletes that also participate, and that's because they love the competition. And it's something they can do, and they can have fun while they're doing it because they just love being competitive.
If you are just joining us, we're talking about the growing, even exploding world of esports here on No Limits today. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at wfyi. So, Cody, how much money is involved in all of this? I mean, it sounds like...
Yeah, substantial, for sure. It's a billion-dollar industry. I think we just crossed
1.5 billion-dollar industry.
Crossed it with ease, then, sounds like. Yeah.
Yes, sir. So it's very substantial.
And is that from, like, the 4 to 5 years ago that you were mentioning, from a standing start at that point to 1.5?
I would say
that's
no.
That's an explosive.
It goes back about a decade, probably.
Yeah, a little bit more than a decade, actually.
Okay, so but in a decade's time, it's grown from nothing to a $1.5 billion industry.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
And Lauren, you mentioned the numbers of people, huge. Do we have demographic breakdowns on who they are, other than nationalities or anything?
Why, yes, we do.
All right.
So so when I did a story kind of focused actually on Pacers gaming to talk about esports and this new push from the NBA 2K. And one of the interesting things was the average age of viewership. So, for example, the average viewer for an NFL game is 50 years old. For the NBA, it's 42. For MLB, I'm a huge baseball fan, it's 52. But for esports, the average viewer is 28 years old, which actually, when I was reporting it, I thought was older than I expected.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized that my 50-year-old father also will occasionally hop onto a Twitch stream just to see how this game goes and watch playthroughs. So the audience skews younger, but not nearly as young as you might necessarily think. And this is like the peak, perfect consumer for, you know, selling advertisements, for getting people involved. For example, with NFL, they just launched their new Madden League at the beginning of this year. And one of their sponsors was Progressive Auto Insurance. And it's just one of those things where it's not necessarily the groups that you think would be supporting, you know, traditional gaming platforms, but it's all of these industries that are coming together and then putting a lot of money into it because they do understand that this is an industry that has already passed the $1.5 billion mark and is just going to continue to grow.
John, you know, in terms of your students who are involved, you know, is there a demographic breakdown for them? Is there a certain profile for those students?
I can tell you pretty much specifically what our demographics are, but I can tell you that we skew slightly higher on the female side than average.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of our goals as a gaming club was to make sure that everyone felt welcome. Everyone is a gamer. We wanted to break the stereotype because I think if you look at the general worldwide, everyone thinks it's pretty much teenage boys.
Mm-hmm.
But we actively went out and encouraged females to play. So we are at slightly above one-third female and two-thirds male. And then it's ranges of all ages from 9th to 12th grade.
Okay. And are they the, you know, in the ways that high school breaks things down, are they the good students, the struggling students, or anything like that? Or is it all across the range?
It's really all across the board, and that's one of the reasons that I love it. We do have some struggling students, but this gave them a reason to come to school and to do their work because I have, you know, academic requirements they have to meet to be able to come and participate. So that's great for them. But then at the same time, I have a couple of my girls are like honor roll students. They're in swing choir and cheerleading. Like, they're in everything, and they're like top 10 in the class, and they're also participating. So it's something that's open to and available to everyone as long as you make it feel comfortable and like a home for everyone.
If you are just joining us, huh? Looks like we lost our calls. We had calls. If you are just joining us, we are talking about the explosion of esports around the world, but specifically here in Indiana. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. So, Lauren, take me through kind of the big bang moment on this, when people first realized, oh, this could be a way, this could be something other than, you know, the at least originally the model on this was that the way people made money from these electronic games was that they were, again, this is almost back in the dark ages, you put a quarter into a machine somewhere and played until your luck ran out. And then eventually you could sell them, obviously, for home consumption and connect and all of that. When did people begin to start seeing possibilities of this as a spectator sport or as something that would be less than a solitary activity or more than a solitary activity, excuse me?
Yeah, I mean, the one thing to keep in mind, especially with online gaming, is that it's been around for almost as long as the internet has. This kind of like creating a community has always been very much a part of the DNA of online gaming. Mm-hmm. And so in the same way that you have Instagram models that have monetized their Instagram accounts or YouTubers that monetize their YouTube accounts, this was also kind of the same genesis for online gaming, figuring out a way to create a community and then figuring out a way to monetize it. And as that has continued to grow very smartly, a lot of video game companies got involved at the very beginning to try and pull everyone together in a way that you could make this into a spectator sport. I'm blanking on a lot of the details for the genesis of Twitch, but I think with a lot of YouTube streaming, that was more of the same, where it was community that was created by gamers, mostly for gamers, that has exploded a little bit more into more casual gamers as well.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about the explosion of gaming, esports, here on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what Spencer has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Spencer, you're on the air.
Hi, hello. How are you today?
Doing well. What's on your mind?
Good. I am actually a general manager of Evolve Youth Esports here in Indianapolis, and I was just got word of your broadcast was going on right now, and I was curious to know if you guys had any questions about someone who kind of works in this scene. Basically what we do, like I said, it is a youth league, ages 9 to 16, and we are, generally our goal is to start involving children at a younger age into the esports industry, and whether that's like actually competing in it, or learning about the esports industry, or you know, maybe potentially pursuing a career inside of it.
How long have you been in business, Spencer?
It just started. Just about January when it began.
Okay, so
Player One Esports, another esports company here in Tucson.
Okay, and what drew you to it?
What drew me personally to it?
Yeah.
I myself am probably a lifelong video game player, and I suppose early on playing video games, I kind of saw that competition. Took away what made video games fun, but as time went on and as more and more video games were designed to be competitive, I started to see how it would bring people together and give them opportunities, and that it could be seen as a just as a dignified establishment like, say, the NFL or the NBA, or like high production values, lots of spectators, lots of involvement with their communities. After finishing college, it was something, it wasn't really a job that existed while I was still in college, but it became one after I kind of finished.
Well, thanks very much for calling and for sharing this. You've given us some things to chew on.
Sure.
Thanks much. Take care.
Sure, thank you.
So, Lauren, how common are tales like Spencer's? I mean, it sounds like,
you know, it's a little bit of everything. So, for example, one of the former and I believe current players, Wolf 74, mm-hmm. Bryant Colon, He graduated. He finished his degree right as he joined NBA 2K and joined the Pacers gaming team. So you have a little bit of everyone from your prototypical dude hanging out in the basement of his parents' house to people with, you know, advanced degrees who know that there is a life outside of playing video games professionally.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the exploding and evolving world of esports in Indiana. My guests are Indiana Public Broadcasting's Lauren Chapman, who's done a lot of reporting on the subject, Senior Director of Esports Operations for the Indiana Pacers, Cody Parent, and Tipton teacher John Robertson. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook or track us down on Twitter. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking about the exploding world of esports, not just here in Indiana, but everywhere. My guests are Indiana Public Broadcasting's Lauren Chapman, Senior Director of Esports Operations for the Indiana Pacers, Cody Parent, and Tipton teacher John Robertson. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Or do what a listener named Cole has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Cole, you're on the air.
Hi, Cole. Thank you.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
I was just wondering, I've been in the kind of esports for like about 5-6 years now, and I've reached out to teams all over the country, and none of the teams or their social medias or stuff like that, they ever really respond to any of their fans and stuff like that or requests and stuff like that. So I was wondering, how would someone who's really, really into esports and really evolved as a player get involved with teams around the country?
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Cole. Sounds like that's a good one for Cody.
Hi, Cole. How's it going? My first question for you would be, which esport are you interested in being involved in?
The Call of Duty.
Call of Duty. Have you ever been to an MLG event before?
I have. I've gone to Columbus.
Awesome. Awesome. So
I went with just a group of friends.
Gotcha. Awesome. Good deal. My first recommendation to anyone I talk with who wants to be involved in esports, whether it's player level or administration or coaching level, is to get involved in whatever esport you're most interested in. So that means going to events, that means playing in online tournaments, that means, you know, volunteering to be a referee online, and networking as much as possible at the grassroots level is number one, because you'll meet friends who are coaches, who are players, and you know, it's really who you know. It's like any other form of business. So establish those relationships at the amateur level and just keep grinding. Now, did you say you wanted to be a professional player too?
Yes, sir.
Okay. The best way is to go to those events and prove that you're one of the best in the world. That's really how it works, especially in Call of Duty. If you want to climb the ranks and make it into CWL and play for one of the top franchises, you really have to go through the grind and find a team you're comfortable with and play every single day and go to every tournament you can possibly go to.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
For the call, Cole.
Thank you for having me.
Certainly. We've gotten an email from a listener named Denise. Again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. Denise writes, like any other coach, Mr. Robertson, that means you, John.
That does mean me.
holds students accountable in the classroom. We appreciate that this is one more option for our students to connect with school, but requires students to be engaged in the classroom as well as, I can't see the thing what it says. It looks like VR lab. Okay.
Right. We have our esports arena and space.
It's falling off the screen there. That's
all right.
I could catch it.
Our esports space arena doubles as a virtual reality lab.
Okay.
So during the school day, we have, because the same computers that run our esports run a virtual reality headsets for the kids. So we have 12 VR headsets, and any teacher has the access to use those at the same time. So it kind of doubles as a program for the school. Not only is it an educational program there, our esports runs during lunch and resorts, which is basically study hall, and then after school also.
Is part of this also, and I'll start with John, but I want to get Lauren's thoughts on this too. You know, it strikes me that one of the great appeals of esports, that we've talked a bit about the sort of community nature of it, the fact that it's something that can be shared, is also a somewhat more egalitarian approach. I remember talking with a traditional coach of a traditional high school sport and said, you know, the reality, in this case it was baseball, said, you know, if you're, by the time you hit high school, if you're not 6 feet tall, there's not a whole heck of a lot I can do with you. Well, that leaves out an awful lot of people.
It does.
Who would want to participate. And it doesn't strike me that there are any huge barriers like that to esports. I'll start with John, but I can see Lauren wants a piece of it too.
You're very much correct. Any student that or person that wants to put in enough time to get good at what they do can do that. We have a student who's in a wheelchair that is on our competitive Overwatch team. Mm-hmm. Overwatch is a 6v6 team objective-based game. And then I love it because, like I taught my ladies, it's like you compete equally with the men and the boys in esports. You can absolutely come in and there's no physical barrier blocking you as long as you want to put in the work and the time and the effort. And I love that about it, and that's one of the reasons why I push it and I encourage it. I mean, I have a daughter, and I want her to feel like she can do it when she grows up if she wants to.
Lauren.
Kind of took the words right out of my mouth. This is one of the few competitions that you can do that doesn't really care about what your gender is, what your ability or disabilities are, you know, anything along those lines. As long as you're willing to put in the time and effort, you can find modified controllers. You can, you know, not necessarily broadcast what your gender is online, and nobody will ever know. And one of the things that was really...
So there's some anonymity to it, too.
There's some, yes. Yeah. Especially if you're playing on a team, you know, as... Overwatch, for example, 6v6, yeah. You know, maybe
probably
your teammates.
Translate what 6v6
six players versus six other players.
Okay,
yeah. But, you know, other than your teammates, they might not ever know if you're not turning on your microphone. But one of the cool things that I thought about some of these competitive leagues that have just recently opened, like NBA 2K, was that there was also no barrier to gender on NBA 2K. And it was just the best players in the entire world competing for, you know, 103 spots.
Cody, I'm curious, at what point did the Pacers begin to see I've been around this world long enough to know that there are a couple of ways this could have broken. Mm-hmm. The Pacers could have seen this as competition or a threat and decided to try to erect a wall, which really, you know, that didn't work well in a lot of other media industries.
Sure.
Or, you know, it sounds like instead they decided to, instead of fighting the wave, tried to ride it. Walk me through that process and that history, because I think there are some lessons there.
Definitely. You know, the Simons, our owners, are very bullish on esports. They saw that quite a few other NBA owners owned other esports franchises over the last mm-hmm. few years. And in early 2017, when the NBA 2K League was announced by Adam Silver, the Pacers were one of the first teams to sign up. So last year was our first season. We were one of the inaugural 17 teams. We built a 3,000-square-foot esports training facility in the St. Vincent Center.
Mm-hmm.
We leverage multiple resources and employees from the Pacers, Fever, and Mad Ant side. So they're all in. You know, we're considered the fourth franchise in the PSNE family. So it's competitive. It's just a different kind of competitiveness for us. So it's exciting, and I'm very thankful as a native Hoosier and longtime Pacers fan to run this franchise.
Are the by my count, if there are 17 in the inaugural, that left 13 out. Are those other 13 scrambling to get in and get onto the train now?
Yes, sir. So we had four enter for season two, and we already have a couple more signed up for season three. So they're coming in quickly, and there's already discussion of international franchises for our league too. So you could see 40, 50, 60 NBA 2K league teams from Beijing to Sao Paulo. It doesn't matter where you live, you can play 2K. you can be in the league.
Well, and I would think, Lauren, I mean, one of the huge things when not just the NBA, but all major sports in the U.S. have tried to make leaps to be international, the transportation is a huge, huge obstacle. Mm-hmm. You know, just saying, particularly I would think for football, where you transport, you know, 50, 60, 70, 80, 100 people all over to one place for an event. Is that part of the, you know, the ability of this to leap borders, is that you don't have to deal with that transportation?
I mean, certainly that's definitely part of it. That might be a nice side effect to it. But I think also that there's something interesting about, especially with this recent boom of athletic teams jumping into esports, mm-hmm. and using their electronic sports platform, NBA 2K, Madden Football, MLB The Show, FIFA. All of these teams have fans all across the globe. And so this is a new avenue for them to kind of reach out to these fans that may never actually be able to travel to see the Pacers play in person or be able to see the Yankees play in person. But they can compete on their, you know, on their competitive esports team. And so I think that's the interesting reach, is that through video games, traditional sports are able to reach an entirely new audience and an international audience as well.
Well, and it also strikes me, it's, I mean, one of the things that has changed in the world of media in general is it's become a far less passive experience, that, you know, today's markets, today's audiences expect to participate. Is that part of the appeal, John, when with your students, is that it's not just, okay, you sit in the stands and then when someone does something spectacular, likely something that you in no way could do yourself, you jump up and you clap and all of that. Here it is, you are both up in the stands and out playing the game at the same time.
I think you touch on a couple really big things that is have the appeal to it. Like, I know that what Cody does, his stream, I all sit in the chat and interact with the person who's streaming. You know, that's, you do have the option to communicate with the players as they're playing, right as it's going on. I also think that people feel like they can compete with the pros in this much more than they can. Like, I could never play golf with Tiger Woods. That's just never going to happen. But if I just happen to get queued up into a lobby with one of the pros in a game, you know, I'm playing with the pros and the best in the world. And that's a really big appeal. And the Twitch chat is huge. Like, when you're watching the big streams, you'll see just emotes going all over the place when something cool happens, and people have the option to clip their own highlights. So if I'm watching a stream and something cool happens, I have the option to clip it and save it as a highlight. And that goes to the professional player or team's feed, and it says so-and-so clipped this and thought it was cool. So then they can see it, but then other people see what people liked. It's really mm-hmm. cool.
How much, you know, because that creates different responsibilities, I would think, also with your market and your audience, Cody, than I mean, what lessons are these pro sports franchises that have been used to doing business in one way, mm-hmm. What lessons are they having to learn here?
Yes, that's a big part, especially being the very first sports league to run an esports franchise, the mm-hmm. NBA. It's been an ongoing learning experience for everyone involved. So,
what were some of the mistakes along the way? I know people hate to talk about those, but think of it as a learning and growth experience and move forward from there.
Sure. You know, one challenge for our league is because the NBA doesn't make or develop the video game we play, mm-hmm. we're in a 50-50 partnership with Take-Two Interactive, who makes the 2K video game. Mm-hmm. So just that interaction between publisher and league, and finding out how employees on both sides put all hands on deck to make this thing work. You have a lot of people on the NBA side who have never worked in esports, mm-hmm. and you have a lot of people on the Take-Two side who have never worked in traditional sports. So just finding the synergy between those two massive companies to find out how to run the best esports league possible has been a major challenge for us. And, you know, we're still trying to learn how that relationship coexists.
Lauren, what are some of the other growing pains? I mean, you don't go from zero to 1.5 billion in the space of time it takes to raise a fourth grader. without having a few bumps along the way.
Yeah, I think one of the interesting challenges for NBA 2K especially was getting viewership on board. There was a bit of a hump where, you know, the opening tip-off was, I think, 85,000 viewers. And then it dropped fairly substantially, and where they weren't necessarily picking up new viewers. But what's interesting about this new season of NBA 2K is actually that the league is continuing to grow and continuing to find viewership. And that kind of gathering a new audience is definitely one of the bigger challenges as new esports come on board. And I think that's probably the biggest one, the biggest challenge and misstep, not necessarily misstep, but thing to overcome.
We've gotten an email from a listener named Annie. And again, if you want to join the conversation by email, you can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Annie writes, could your guests discuss the gambling often involved with League of Legends and other games? Any evidence of gambling addiction from playing?
I can talk about that a little bit.
Yeah.
Some of the games have an aspect where for cosmetic items or certain things for your character, you have to buy loot boxes is what they're called. And it's usually like a dollar and you get four or five cosmetic items within the box. And sometimes people can get kind of addicted to trying to get that legendary item because there's different levels of rareness and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about it within our club. I tell them, I'm like, guys, these are cosmetic. You don't need them to be better at the game. If you want to just play the game, play it and be good. But it is something that needs to be addressed, with, especially in the teenage market. Show them how it's not worth the return of investment for the money you're spending. You can earn it through doing things in the game, also in most games, so you don't have to spend money. But to accelerate that, sometimes people do want to spend money.
But I know, Cody, you know, the Supreme Court decision that legalized sports betting in general from, I think it was just last year, and then obviously that's provoked here in Indiana. There's a lot of legislation discussion about that. And if I'm not mistaken, I think Major League Baseball is actually beginning to start making a case that all of the information associated with the sport they own. So, you know, like if you want to publish a box score or use anything to tip betting odds or anything like that, you're going to have to cut a deal with them to do it. So it is going to change things. How do you see that affecting the business model for esports?
You know, I can speak for 2K specifically. It already exists in our world. Mm-hmm. I know people are already betting on our games. And, you know, that's something that at the league level and at the franchise level, you know, that's something we can't worry about right now. Mm-hmm. We're focused on growing this league and growing our audience. And if gambling becomes part of esports, you know, that it's going to happen one way or another, like it is in traditional sports. So we're focused on building our audience, building our franchise and our league to the best of our ability.
Lauren, as someone who's reported on this, how do you see that dynamic? Because all of the traditional sports are, I'm trying to think of a more technical term to use than freaking out, but that is basically what they're doing. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. This is actually one of those things where I don't really know how it's going to play out. And I think Cody's absolutely right that I think that a lot of the approaches of these organizations is we don't necessarily have control over it. So maybe we don't freak out about it, to coin a phrase, right this very second.
But the thing, in some ways, sports betting evolved underground. There are parallels between that and esports, too, that they kind of shot above ground and shot above. And they're both now on their way to being multi-billion-dollar industries. Tell you what, that may be something we can chew on when we get to the other side of the break. We are talking about the exploding and evolving world of esports, not just here in Indiana, but all over the world. It's become now a $1.5 billion industry in the space of about the blink of an eye. My guests are Indiana Public Broadcasting's Lauren Chapman, Senior Director of Esports Operations for the Indiana Pacers, Cody Parent, and Tipton teacher John Robertson. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about esports and the ways that this industry is growing and evolving, not just here in Indiana, but around the world. My guests are Indiana Public Broadcasting's Lauren Chapman, who's done a lot of reporting on the subject, senior director of esports operations for the Indiana Pacers, Cody Parent, and Tipton teacher John Robertson. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Or do what a listener named Adam has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Adam, you're on the air.
Hi there. How's it going?
It's going fine. What's on your mind?
No, I just wanted to call in. My name's Adam Crudy. I'm the director of what's called Player One Esports, located here in Carmel, Indiana.
Cody's nodding here.
Hi, Adam. How are you?
Hey, Cody. You sound great on the radio.
Thank you, sir. I've heard that a lot.
No, I was just fascinated by the conversation. Thought I'd call in and offer up some more information just about how esports is growing and blossoming here in Indy.
Sure. So how long have you been in it?
Oh, gosh. So I've got a pretty long history within gaming, and then within esports, I've had a lot of involvement in the last, I'd say, 3 to 4 years now.
Okay, and when did walk me through sort of the path where it for you, because this seems to be the fascinating arc here, is how people began to move this from being, in effect, a hobby or a way to, to pass time, and began to see the business possibilities in it.
Yeah, so essentially it really comes from passion. There's an immense amount of passion that goes behind the gamers. And I think you grow up in that industry, you grow up in that world, and you just kind of want to see it grow and develop. And so, I grew up, playing in arcades, that used to be in all the malls, and there was always this excitement. But again, the inclusion was always attractive. There was never anybody left out. It was always something that somebody could adapt to. As a business, it's a very unique challenge because it's kind of like drinking from a fire hose a little bit. There's so many different aspects that you have to kind of work around, get involved in. And then there's a lot of learning you have to do because these communities within the games are so different.
Well, thanks very much. I'm going to give the panel, you've given us some things to chew on here, but thanks very much for calling in and for sharing your story.
Yeah, no, one last thought.
Sure.
We do a lot of events, both physically here in Indiana, up in Carmel, and we host a lot of them online. So for anyone out there listening, I highly recommend checking out playeroneesports.com /events to catch all the action.
All right. Thanks very much.
Thanks.
Take care.
Have a great day, guys.
You too. Take care. So I'm curious because this is, part of any sports thing is it's a fan experience. And the connection there often, people who are, I'll stay in your world, Cody, or the Pacers world.
Yes, sir.
You don't need to call me sir. It makes me feel old.
It's a bad habit.
Okay. People who are fans of, say, LeBron James as opposed to Steph Curry, that's often about much more than the sport. You're making kinds of cultural statements and statements about who you are and what things you value and, how you see yourself fitting into the world by choosing to become a fan of whomever. When people are fans in this world, what are they connected to? What kinds of statements are they making? I can see everybody leaning forward. And then I'm going to start with Cody, but I'm going to go around the horn on it. Okay.
Sure. I think having a platform like Twitch, which is, the streaming home for the vast majority of esports and video games in general allows these players and their personalities to show through. And the analogy I like to use is, so Wolf was our number one pick in season one, and he can hop on Twitch and stream his gameplay and interact with the chat immediately, maybe a 2 or 3 second delay. That's the equivalent to Victor Oladipo in his backyard shooting jumpers and training, and we could all stand right behind him and ask him why he's going with his left hand like that. Why does he release at that point? So the ability for fans and viewers to interact directly with pro players or personalities they enjoy, it takes it to the next level. And every personality, every player, every influencer is different, and people are attracted to follow those people for very different reasons. It's, you know, some might be toxic in a stream and people enjoy watching that, or somebody might be really good at Overwatch and we tune in to see how we can improve our game to play at their level. And that's why video games and esports are so amazing. There's so many different communities, like Adam touched on. They're very different. You know, and it doesn't matter who you are, doesn't matter where you're from, your gender, your religion, anybody and everybody can play esports and video games.
Lauren.
Yeah, I was actually talking about this with my D&D group last night, taking it away from
even
digital.
That one. Yeah, people probably get Dungeons and Dragons, right?
Yeah. we were talking about Twitch because one of my players has a Twitch stream. We were making fun of him, but because everybody kind of has a Twitch stream at this point, at least among my millennial friends. And it's very interesting, kind of jumping off what Cody was talking about with being able to interact with everyone. The barrier to entry is so low that, like, even politicians are kind of hopping in on this. So there was a guy who was playing Donkey Kong 64.
And it was going so well until
It was. Yeah. It was a guy who was playing Donkey Kong 64, and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez hopped in to the conversation to talk about the game and then also then start talking about LGBTQ and more specifically trans rights. So this is a very interesting place where a community has been built, and you're basically all able to interact with each other like that. And that kind of evolution is what is so incredibly fascinating about esports in general.
John.
When it comes to the streamers, I feel like they create a certain mood for their channel. So, like, someone could be a very open and kind streamer and, like, interact with them, but then there is a group of people that's attracted to the, like Cody said, the toxic, mean, angry people. So, like, you can choose whoever, you know, like the heel, I guess, from professional wrestling terms. You can choose those to be the fans of. I know that our students find a lot of times they pick their favorites based on the characters that people play, because within esports, you know, like Overwatch or League of Legends, there's a variety of characters to choose from and play as. And kids like to see the people that play the characters they like and follow them, so that's another way that they choose who to follow and be fans of.
As an educator, though, do you worry? I mean, because the interaction is so immediate, and we've seen, you know, so much research and so many stories about online bullying and, you know, other forms of destructive behavior. I understand that, you know, and I'm not going to throw the toxic stuff. I mean, that's an old tradition of people showing up to boo someone. It's, you know, I mean, back in the day, I think one of the still most watched TV shows of all time was the one about, you know, figuring out who shot JR on Dallas, and it was all about the appeal of that was watching someone do despicable things week after week after week. But do you worry about that as an educator, what they're exposed to, and what safeguards are there in place?
I think the thing, like, it's a concern, but at the same time, they're going to be doing these things at home. So we've tried to create an environment where we can guide them in how to manage their feelings and their mental state when they're doing these things. I would rather have someone guided by an educator or who's older, who's been trained in that, to say, look, I understand that you're mad and I understand that you don't like losing, but let's talk about how to manage that. Let's talk about how to, you know, make that work. And that's one of the things we provide. I can't monitor what they do 24 hours a day. So, I mean, if they go home and do things that are wrong, like wrong or bad.
Well, and I'm thinking more of, because they're young people, I mean, do you worry, are there safeguards in place to make sure, for example, that there aren't predators or predatory behavior or people who are just actively trying
to do it? They're definitely they're under our umbrella of security when they play at the school, and that's why we've created a school league. So that they're playing, they're not playing on Twitch when they're playing with us. They're playing in our created schools, similar to traditional sports, where they're playing with other schools. So like it'll be Tipton versus Noblesville or Tipton versus Munster.
Okay.
That's what we created for them.
Okay, so
we're in the process of creating for them.
But Cody, yours is much more kind of the Wild West, where everything's wide open. What do you have, safeguards or people who are monitoring the activity to make sure that, or is it, you know, pretty much laissez-faire?
For my players specifically, they are monitored, and you know, we are very understanding of the influence we have over younger kids who might look up to our players and aspire to be professional 2K athletes. So that is definitely consistently talked about from me to our players and a franchise in a whole. That's a big focus for us moving forward. So yeah, I think it's just like an NBA professional. You have to understand the influence you have, and it's a lot of responsibility that comes along with it.
Lauren, is this a concern, though? I mean,
overall,
yeah.
I mean,
it sounds like in addition to reporting on it, you also participate in esports and in this world. I mean, do you see examples of abusive conduct or behavior?
I mean, sure. I'm also a woman who is on the internet. So that's that. As much as we talk about these communities, sometimes these communities can turn toxic. And I think that's also an interesting aspect of esports, because we were talking actually before we hopped on, and we were talking about, you know, creating spaces online so that women gamers can enjoy these same spaces, and creating a way to really support that. And so there is toxicity, but I also think that within each of these individual communities, that there's a certain level of self-regulation that is starting to happen as there are more women gamers, as there are more organizations that are working actively to support women gamers, and as more members of the community are standing up against that kind of toxicity.
What forms is that self-regulation?
Women only leagues have been talked about for a lot of esports. And just generally speaking, bystanders just kind of hopping up and calling out things when they are wrong. And so there are, you know, certain streamers that have been called out in that way. And there's a certain level in which, you know, even if you do enjoy someone who is a more toxic streamer, that, you know, eventually the joke gets old. And the shtick gets old, and people kind of back away from it.
Yeah, there's a reason Dallas was canceled.
Precisely, finally. Yeah.
Well, I can tell you that I've witnessed, like, if I'm outside the room talking to another teacher and I let the kids kind of self-monitor, I've seen boys stand up for the girls and say, hey, don't talk to her like that. She's just as good as you are, probably better. So, I mean, it is happening within our community. It's our job to help create that, I feel like.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me add, because, you know, the world of business, so there are two things that are deadly. The first and most obvious one is failure. But the second one is growth that is too rapid. And it would seem to me that esports has some exposure to that second threat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what challenges do you see ahead for this industry that it's going to have to meet to get to a position similar to, say, the NBA or other major sports leagues where there is a certain amount of stability? I'll start with Lauren, but I want to hear everyone's thoughts on that.
Yeah, there's always the concern of oversaturation. But the one interesting aspect for esports to combat that oversaturation is how close you are to the game. So I am a huge baseball fan, grew up a huge Cubs and Yankees fan. But there is never a point in my life that I'm going to be able to play catch on Wrigley Field. But I can pick up the controller and play NBA 2K whenever I want. And that kind of lack of barrier to entry has definitely pushed the issue of oversaturation a bit farther into the future. So I think, generally speaking, oversaturation, the commercialization of a lot of these streams, there's a certain appeal of the Wild West-ness to it. And just making sure that when you are developing viewers that they are consistently coming back, that kind of business model is what's going to continue to support all of these different leagues.
John, I'm going to go to you next.
In the education setting, we are currently combating companies that want to come in and take over and become the provider of esports in high schools, and they're charging large sums of money per student, and it's not sustainable. So we're combating that in Indiana by we've created our own network of schools and said we'll just run it like the IHSAA ourselves so that we're playing in this way. But that's our biggest concern is the, you know, people that don't know about esports, the big companies come in and give a good sales pitch and say, here's what we're going to provide and here's what we're going to do. But in the long term, student experience has been awful with those companies. So that's why we've created our
own. In what ways? I'm sorry, John.
I mean, one of the things they say is, you know, here's who you're supposed to play this week. Schedule your own match. So then you've got like Tipton versus whoever. And then you got high school kids that are supposed to say, okay, we're going to meet at this time and this day, and it's going to work for all 12 people, and we're going to play. And that doesn't work. So what happens is the matches, the kids try to game the scheduling system so that they don't actually have to play, but they can force a forfeit to still get the win. And that's not what it's supposed to be about. It's supposed to be about competition and playing the game and winning the game. So, you know, I asked the company, I said, what am I paying you for to provide for me other than you're saying, okay, you guys play these guys? And because that's all it is. And then they have some prizing at the end. And then, to me, the prizing shouldn't be important. It should be about school spirit and a trophy maybe, and that's it. So that's that's one of our things, because if these companies keep coming in and doing this and not providing something, administrations aren't going to keep giving money to them because money's tight in schools. So that's what we're fighting right now is just sustainability and providing something ourselves and not looking to somebody who's trying to take advantage of students.
Cody.
And I would think about it the other way, the potential of esports and the industry continuing to grow. You know, this is – we're so early. I feel like we're the pioneers of the esports industry.
So you don't see a ceiling anytime soon?
I don't. I think as technology continues to improve, you know, there's always going to be the new and better and bigger video game coming out, and people love gaming and love video games. And, you know, as the internet gets better – there's going to be less lag where people feel comfortable playing against each other across the entire world. So I think we're at the very beginning, and I don't see this slowing down anytime soon.
Lauren.
There's a certain level, kind of bouncing off of Cody's point, there's a certain level of inertia as a result of it all being video games. Because, you know, it started with arcade games, and now we have League of Legends, and we have NBA 2K, and, you know, Fortnite is a more recent addition to all of this. And so as you continue to have these blockbuster video games, you're going to continue to have blockbuster esports leagues that kind of do this sort of bureaucratic inertia, but within esports.
And I'm afraid that will have to be the last word. This hour just flat flew. I want to thank my guests, IPBS's Lauren Chapman, Senior Director of Esports Operations for the Indiana Pacers, Cody Parent, and Tipton teacher John Robertson for what's been a lively conversation. I am John Krull. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producers, Sarah Neal Estes, Roxana Caldwell, and Jill Sheridan. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. Emily Matheny screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.